Welcome to Supernatural Podcast episode number 46 for Red Sky at Morning. The episode was written by Lawrence Andrews, directed by Cliff Boyle, and originally aired in the U.S. on November 8, 2007. Let's move right into the synopsis this week with Kristen and Annie.
Summary for episode 3.06, Red Sky at Morning. Our episode begins as a woman is running along the dock and sees a ship off in the distance. It keeps disappearing and reappearing, and something is obviously not right. So she goes back to her house, and she gets in the shower, which is never a good sign in this show. And our attacker somehow makes it into the shower and chokes her to death.
It was kind of weird. It was like you could see a figure through the frosted glass, but you weren't quite sure what it was. Mm-hmm. And then...
And wasn't there something with the water?
Like, yeah, he on the water. Put his hand up against the door, and it was, like, dripping water. Almost like the water was coming, like, straight from his fingers.
Uh-huh. Okay, so now we're back to Sam and Dean. Another emotional confrontation in the front seat of the Impala. Why are they having all of the arguments in the Impala now?
Well, because they're driving around all the time. I mean, it's a likely place for them to have these little conversations.
Before, they always did them in, like, the hotel and stuff.
Yeah,
and I actually like it better when they're up and they can walk around and...
Yeah. But I think it kind of, like, makes you focus more on the boys and...
Their facial expressions?
Yeah.
So, Dean, being the sharp tech that he is, wonders where one of the bullets from the Colt went, which I think is pretty smart of Dean to figure that out.
Yeah.
He goes, "You got something to tell me?" And Sam's like, "It's not your birthday." And then once Sam admits to having fired off the Colt and killing the Crossroads demon, Dean thinks it's a stupid risk, and he says, "You could have gotten yourself killed." And Sam's like, "Well, I didn't." And so that's kind of showing Sam's little defiant brother
nature.
Yeah,
he's a little defiant, but I mean, even still, I think he is really just trying to help. Because you remember later when he was like, "Oh, you know, it just feels like I can't save anyone anymore."
Yeah, and Sam says that Dean's his brother, and he's going to do whatever he can to save him. He sure as hell not going to apologize for it.
I think it's kind of nice, you know, and you even get to see Dean's reaction, and he was actually a little bit hopeful, I noticed, that maybe it worked.
Oh, yeah, he was. He was like, "Well, am I out of the deal?" And Sam was
like, just the expression on his face, there was like that little glimmer of hope,
right.
And then Sam was like, "No."
Yeah. Don't you think I would have mentioned that little detail?
Yeah.
Well, next, Sam and Dean pose as detectives from the sheriff's department and find out someone named Alex is also working on the case. They suspect it's another hunter. And this Miss K's woman that they're interviewing really likes Sam a lot.
Yeah. That was a little bit creepy.
Dean's like, "What a crazy old broad." Sam says, "Why, because she believes in ghosts?" And Dean says, "Ha ha, looking at you, sticking up for your girlfriend, you cougar hound." That's adorable. And then they go to the docks where they parked the Impala, or at least they think they did, and they find it's missing.
And Dean starts freaking out.
"This is where we parked the car, right? Where's my car? Did you feed the meter?" "Yes, I fed the meter." "Somebody stole my car." And then he
hyperventilating and doubles over, and Sam's like, "Oh my god.
Dean, calm down." And then Bella had it towed. What a bitch.
Seriously. Okay, now what do you think of Bella?
I don't know. I kind of like how she plays off of Dean, but she makes him look really stupid a lot of the times. I mean, sometimes it's funny, but sometimes it's just like, Dean can't win. And then he's just like, "Can I shoot her?" And Sam's like, not in public. Which is really funny. But what do you think of Bella?
I don't know. I didn't like her at first, but I think throughout this episode, not necessarily at the beginning, but by the end of the episode, I think I liked her a lot better.
Yeah.
Just her interaction with Dean is really adorable.
Yeah.
Like, she, like, it's...
And even her interaction with Sam,
almost.
he's given her attitude, and she's like, "I expect that from Dean, but why from you?" And he's like, "You shot me." Which is true. So, then another victim gets choked by some hands that come out of the tub or something like that. And his brother is the person who is living in the house with him, and he's being interviewed by Sam and Dean, and he says that he saw the ship too, which basically means that he's gonna die. So Sam and Dean are going to try to save him, even though Bella warns them that he's cannon fodder and that he can't be saved in time. But Sam and Dean say they have souls, so they're going to try. But he dies anyways, because he's stupid.
Well, yeah. Isn't that what happens most of the time in this show? People are dumb. They walk into the haunted house.
Yeah, but he was just like, you guys aren't cops. Not in that crappy car. Which was funny. Kind of crazy how he died by, like, drowning from the water coming out of his mouth. That was creepy. I actually liked that effect.
Yeah. I don't know. That was really weird because, you know, just like a new idea, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It was good for the Flying Dutchman ghost ship motif.
Yeah.
Okay, then Bella finds the boys squatting in an abandoned house. She's ID'd the ship. She needs help to get the Hand of Glory from the Sea Pines Maritime Museum.
Did you suspect anything? Like, why would she come to them and, you know, with the information and just say, okay, here it is? Like, I don't know. I thought that was a little bit off, maybe. But I wasn't quite sure.
True. She did say that for them to just get out of her way at the beginning.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of weird for her to be asking them help. I mean, we find out later that she was duping them, but...
Pretty much.
I don't know.
Maybe she wanted an excuse to see Dean in a suit.
Maybe. Speaking of, they get all dressed up and head over to the party. Dean is Bella's date, and Sam is Miss Kay's date, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Some people that we were watching it with thought it was really gross, but...
It was a little bit, but it was really funny.
But it was supposed to be awkwardly funny, like...
It was.
Feel sorry for Sam that he's put in this situation, but...
Yeah. Then Dean says, I want all the details in the morning.
Oh, God. Dean, stop torturing your brother.
Yeah.
Anyways, Bella faints as a diversion to get them upstairs, and Dean steals the hand. He won't let Bella take it in her purse because he doesn't trust her. With good reason.
Exactly.
If we recall the rabbit's foot incident in the diner.
The rabbit's foot and then the lotto tickets and...
Yes, she has sticky fingers, doesn't she? Anyways, Sam finds out the pattern between the deaths. Miss Kay says that the rumor is that the boys killed their father to inherit his real estate fortune. And the woman that died in the beginning was in a car accident where her cousin died. All cases where the victim killed someone in their family. So now they have that going for them. They know the pattern. So when they get back to the car, Bella has stolen the Hand of Glory and replaced it with a model sailboat in a bottle. And when Bella gets back to her car, counting her bag full of money from the transaction she's just made selling the Hand of Glory, she sees the ship. Bad news. Yeah, she goes back to the boys for help, but she killed someone in her family.
And they, of course, want to know who it was, and...
But she won't say who she killed. And this adds another layer to her character.
Yeah.
It kind of makes her deeper, because before, the problem with her was that people thought that she was just, you know, there for no reason at all, just to mix things up. She didn't have a backstory like Gordon or John or Sam or Dean, for that matter, and...
Dean said, how did you get like this? What, daddy didn't give you enough hugs or something?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like...
She's very guarded.
Yeah, there has to be tragedy in someone's life to push them towards a life of hunting or a life of, I don't know, what would you call what she does?
Not quite sure.
Yeah. So, basically, the story of the ship is very Cain and Abel. The captain of the ship hung his own brother, and that's why the brother is going after people who killed someone in their family. So Sam figures that a seance might bring the captain back, So he does some of that Latin magic. And then there's a rainstorm, and Bella almost drowns.
Because the spirit comes and attacks her, and she almost internally drowns.
Then the spirit's brother, the captain of the ship, shows up, and he says he's sorry. But I don't think that the brother really forgives him, because he just charges right at him and
come together, and there's like this big water
explosion.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really awesome. Anyways, the boys are packing up, and Bella comes back to their house that they're staying at, and she gives them $10,000 for their troubles, because she doesn't like to be in anyone's debt. And then Dean knows where that money's going. Atlantic City. So then we have the conflict in the Impala that's becoming a staple this season. And Dean basically apologizes for making that deal, even though you know he's not sorry. But he says he understands how Sam feels and what he's going through.
And he understands that he wants to help him, but...
Right. He believes Sam is stronger than him and that he'll get over it, which is really kind of insensitive to say.
I thought it was, too.
Even though he's trying to be sensitive, it's like, no, I won't get over it.
Yeah,
you're leaving me.
But I think it's more of a defense mechanism with him. He's just doesn't know how to deal with it. I don't think he really wants to leave Sam either.
Well, yeah. And so Sam is pretty blunt, and he says, "Go screw yourself, Dean. I want you to give a crap that you're dying." And Sam tells Dean to quit worrying about him and start worrying about himself. And so, after all of that, Sam's like, "So that's it? Nothing else to say from you?" And Dean's like, "I think I'll play craps."
Just completely changes the subject, and you're just like, "What is that about?"
Yeah.
But you can tell that Dean, like, just the expression on his face.
Oh my god.
Which Jensen Ackles does such a good job.
I know.
With, like, just his facial expressions.
His
even
eyes.
Just his eyes.
His eyes.
He can
are
do so,
so
much with that.
Yeah.
And you can just tell that he doesn't believe what he's saying, and he's.
Right.
What would you say overall? Good, bad?
I would give it a B+. I liked it. I liked a lot of the moments, like when Dean loses his car and when Dean was teasing Sam about Miss K's.
I would probably give it a B+ also, just because it was a pretty good episode. It wasn't the best, but I liked it. I thought there was a lot of development of Bella's story, which mm-hmm. is pretty important, because I think she's going to become a more regular character.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I personally thought that the interaction between Dean and Bella was really cute.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's cute when Dean gets teased and just Sam. Yeah.
I think that's about it.
Well, this is Kristen.
This is Annie.
And we enjoyed talking to you guys. See you next week.
See you next week.
Excellent recap, guys. Let's move on to my discussion with Josh. Hi, I'm Ellen.
And this is Josh.
So, overall, what did you think?
Overall, I really enjoyed Red Sky at Morning. I thought that it did a good job of having some spooky scenes, having some good banter. They did some research, and they had a mystery to solve, which was nice.
I really liked it as well. I thought that the pacing was nice. It wasn't too top-heavy or bottom-heavy like we saw last week.
Right.
It had some nice dialogue, some good banter, like you said, and there were some funny parts, like Sam and the old lady.
Right.
I mean, it was almost like a Veronica Mars episode, where it has a little of everything.
Oh, you're right. You know, I didn't think of that comparison, but it's good, because they had, you know, the funny parts, they had the mystery, they had an undercover part that they had to do, and you know, and back to our show, they had folklore to deal with again, which was nice.
And there was a lot to like in this episode, I think.
For instance, I liked the dialogue this week. I think it really jumped out at me as compared to last week. I really enjoyed the story last week and what we dealt with the childhood bedtime stories, but this week I thought the character sounded much more natural.
Oh, definitely. You had a lot of dialogue just with the brothers again, but then there was some nice secondary characters that balanced the episode.
the writer, Lawrence Andrie's first episode that he's written for Supernatural, but I think he did a really good job writing for the characters, especially for it being his first time.
Yeah, I noticed that there was a lot more strong language, shall we say. And what's interesting is back in June, the FCC, I think it was, I could be wrong on that, but whoever monitors the language for the television medium actually has upped what they can say on TV.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So some of the things that they said, if you go back and look at sort of the way Dean and Sam were kind of fighting with each other at the beginning and the end, you know, we had that bookend, which I really liked. Some of the language that they used was much stronger than you normally would see. And I realized that that's probably what they're doing now. They're starting to incorporate that, because if it came to pass in June, we'd now start to see the episodes that were written around that time.
Oh, that's right. I didn't even think of that.
So it was, but it made it really realistic, like how brothers really would talk to each other.
Yes, exactly. It definitely felt like that this guy knows what it's like to have a conversation with a sibling.
Yes, definitely more so in this episode than we've seen for a while.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. And the ghost ship mythology, love the idea of the ghost ship, the Flying Dutchman, all that fun stuff. And I thought it wasn't too overdone or too, you know, pushed too heavily. It was actually kind of just the backdrop. It wasn't the focus.
I agree. I think it was really nicely done, because not only was it a ghost ship that had a really interesting backstory, but there was also motive behind the killing. It wasn't just some random haunting, which was really a nice way to tie together the folklore and like the mystery aspect of the show. And plus, you know, creepy ghosts. I always enjoy the good scary stuff. It could have been a little scarier, but there were some moments that were tense and frightening.
That is true. It had some pretty good death scenes.
Right.
It was actually kind of reminiscent of the death scenes like we saw back in like Bugs, where when you have something that's attacking that you don't see it. Really?
Right.
I mean, it's kind of, it's eluded and you get flashes, but you don't see what's actually happening. But that can actually make it a little scarier.
I agree. You know, we didn't get to see it until we see Sam and Dean see it, which made it a little more intense. Although you have to wonder about people who would reach over a bathtub full of black, gooey water. It's probably not ever a good idea if your bathtub fills up with some unknown substance to go poking around in it.
Yeah, that's true. It would have. After, I mean, we've had a lot of gore this season, which is kind of unusual. For a while we hadn't seen any, and I like that. I like the scary stuff. But this one didn't have that. It was definitely more your, like, old crime novel kind of movies where you had to use your imagination. Kind of like Hitchcock.
Which is nice for building tension. And then I guess we get the more of the payoff with the reverse drowning, where it seemed like they're coughing up water out of nowhere.
Yeah, that was a neat effect.
That was. It couldn't have been comfortable for the actors.
I did like at the end, on the same note, where you saw the guy show up in the graveyard, you know, and you actually saw him show up, and you saw that little interaction there between the dead guys, and, you know, that was a nice little roundup.
I think that I enjoyed that, too. It was a nice twist, because when they went to the graveyard, like, oh, how are they going to get out of this? They're just going to do an exorcism or something. But I didn't expect them to be summoning a ghost. You know, I thought they were getting rid of one. Yeah, neat spin on what they usually do.
Yeah, and they had some nice visual effects in this one. Well, let's talk about Bella. She's back. I put this in my like category simply because I thought she was like 1,000 times better than we saw her last time.
Yeah, I agree.
I still don't like her, but I understand her role, and I know why now they explained her and set her up the way they did, was because she really slides into a niche. And in this episode, it was, maybe that's why the episode was rated a little bit lower, because people really don't like her and she was an integral character, but, but she wasn't nearly as annoying. And she was almost a Catwoman to Dean's Batman. You know, she played that, like, alternative character who they were very evenly matched, like, with the dialogue and, you know, when he was getting ready and she was getting ready and they were going to go to the party. And they had that really nice dialogue where it was almost a role reversal for Dean. So that I really liked, and I think that's why I put it in the like category.
Does that make Sam Robin?
Yeah, I would imagine so.
I agree. I think Bella's not my favorite, but in this episode, I didn't like her, but I think I didn't like her in the way you're supposed to not like her, if that makes sense. Like, we're supposed to think that she's immoral and, a bad person, and the way that Dean and Sam look at her, as opposed to the I can't stand her because she's an obnoxious character. So I think that her role in this one just lent more to her strength as a character and as a possible, like you said, the person that's going to fill that niche when they need that catalyst for how they get involved or solve that mystery or come across that object or whatever they need to use her for in the future.
Yeah, and I think another reason why she played so well in this episode was because Sam was just saying how he feels like he can't save anyone, and here's somebody that they could save, but at the same time, is she worth saving?
Exactly. Yeah, I like that, and I liked the fact that, that they did save her at the end, that she learned that that it is a good thing that there are psychopaths like Sam and Dean out there going around helping people, because usually it's them, fighting something, and then the pretty demon or, Bella or Ruby shows up at the end and laughs at them and tells them how clueless they are and then leaves. So
Yeah.
it was nice to have her finally, for them to have not an upper hand, but to kind of show that they're actually doing some good in the world.
Definitely, especially after she had called them serial killers.
Exactly.
And if you think about it from an FBI standpoint or something, you just see these people and they kill things, and maybe you don't believe in the supernatural, maybe you just think that they're killing humans, and yeah, they could easily pass as serial killers.
Right. They are on the most wanted list.
But if you look at it in the right context, and that's kind of how Bella changed her view of them, was that, yeah, they do good.
Yeah, it's a nice change from the girl showing up at the end saying, "Ha ha, you're so dumb. You don't know what's going on," and then leaving.
And, Bobby really put a lot of dislike about her in their heads initially.
That's true.
So they kind of came in with that stereotype that Bella is this horrible person who's just out and greedy and so forth. And that's true, but she might actually have another side to her that's useful to them.
And I'm sure that we'll see more of her in the future.
I'm sure we will. Her accent is real.
Right.
I got some emails about that.
We concede.
Yeah, it still doesn't sound quite right, and I'm sorry for anybody if I offended anyone about her accent, but it wasn't quite as noticeable this time.
No, it wasn't as distracting. I don't know if I was expecting it or what. Another aspect that, of having Bella in, they could pull off that whole undercover caper, which, the guys do a lot. They do their disguises, but this was definitely out of their comfort zone, which was nice.
Yeah, Dean in a tux. That is definitely not a comfort zone.
And Sam having to escort old ladies.
Who hit on him?
And I had to laugh at the Miss Havisham reference. My brother and I had to laugh because that's like the one piece of literature he has read in his life is Great Expectations.
That's a good book. Poor Sam.
Right.
Seriously, poor guy. He loses all the girls he's ever attached to, and then here this, 65-year-old woman's putting the moves on him.
Right.
And he couldn't do anything about it because she was the invite.
That's right. Dean gets all of these sexy ladies to hang out with, and he gets the old lady.
Maybe she'll leave him some money in her will.
Right. Driving Miss Daisy.
I just couldn't stop laughing at that part. When they were dancing, I was just the look on his face. I bet they had some discussion about that. Like, how'd I get stuck with the old lady? But this was a return of compassionate Sam.
That's
He
true.
hasn't been so nice the last few episodes. He hasn't kind of embraced that normal persona about wanting to save people and help people, and he's been moody and, not so happy, and now here's this return of Sam. So it was nice to see that part.
It was nice, and it was nice to have him and Dean talk about that situation, how he feels in a realistic way about his frustrations over not being able to save people and the conversations that they had at the beginning and the end of the episode. I mean, it felt really real to me, the way that they were arguing at the end. I mean, anyone who's had a frustrating argument with a sibling or a close friend where they're both wanting to do what's right, but not quite matching up and not understanding each other's frustration, it was really true to life.
Yeah, and I like how they started the episode where they're arguing, and then at the end you see it again, but you see Dean understanding more of Sam's point of view, where he kind of moves beyond his, like, I'm doing this all for me to protect Sam, where here he's starting to incorporate Sam's views on it, and yet he still wants to maintain his position and not talk about it and go to, you know, Atlantic City.
Right, exactly, which only serves to frustrate Sam more. So you kind of, you just can't help but sympathize with both of them.
Yeah, there's, that's the problem here. It's like not one of them is right. They're both right.
Right. Yep, it just depends on, it's funny because my brother and I argued about that too, because he's definitely the dean in our relationship, and he was so laughing at how frustrated Sam still was with him. Even though he's trying to apologize and everything, you can't help but say, you know, yeah, Dean's apologizing, but he's still so mind-numbingly aggravating at his attitude about the whole thing.
Yeah, this is a very, very well-balanced, instead of the, you know, let's talk about fairy tales and then let's go shoot a demon and there's nothing in between. This one had that dichotomy, but it was blended.
It was, and it was... Like you said, that whole thing about Sam needing to save someone, and then you bring Bella in, and she's like, ha-ha, y'all are losers. And then she ends up needing to be saved, and yet they still haven't gotten anywhere, but it still seems to have moved them to a different place by the end of the episode.
And she gave him some money.
That's right, which I felt, after she stole all their lotto ticket.
Well, yeah, but that's saying something for her, because she, you know, rolls around in satin sheets naked with money.
That's right. That's how she shows her affection.
I can imagine there'd be some paper cuts involved there.
No kidding. Oh, I kind of like you guys. Here's some cash.
It's interesting that the characters we're meeting in the different episodes are embodying the seven deadly sins.
That is interesting.
You know, here in the first episode of the season, we're talking, and everybody seemed to be complaining that you didn't see what happened to all the sins. They're really focused on a couple of them. And here, Bella's greed. And right. I've noticed this. It popped up in the last few episodes where different characters, secondary characters, are kind of, you know, portraying one of the sins as their main character type. So I wonder if that's intentional or if it's not. And I guess it's kind of a question there, but I really liked that and it's probably not even intentional.
That is interesting. It's definitely a good way to, you know, have a theme running through, because those are seven deadly sins for a reason. It's interesting to see them play out in different characters, whether intentionally or not.
Yeah, you know, because in that episode they were talking about how everybody has these flaws because we're human, and that we all embody some of these sins somehow. So they kind of got that stuck in my head in the first episode, and now it's playing out in all of them. So
I was just going to say, my don't like is pretty short, and it's kind of sounds nitpicky, but I was wondering what brought them to the town in the first place. It just kind of shows them there, and it seems really odd that they would be showing up just for that one odd drowning.
They've shown up for stranger things, I suppose.
That's true.
But you're right. They didn't. I mean, at least with, like, Faith, the whole episode wasn't about the creature. It was, I mean, of course, they were Grim Reapers, but the very beginning, if you remember, they were in some house and they shot some creature that electrocuted Dean.
Well, right.
They didn't even tell you how they got there or why. I mean, they told you why they were there, what they were hunting, but they didn't give you any of the backstory. And I wonder if maybe this was something like that, where they just, you know, in the essence of 42 minutes,
right,
they didn't want to introduce all that stuff about how they got there. But that's the interesting thing.
I think you're right. I'm sure it was done to save time, you know, just so they could jump right into the story. But it just seemed interesting, I guess, because it's been so obvious this season when they announce at the beginning of every episode why they're going there, where they're going, and why. In this episode, they just skipped right over it.
Yeah. What, were they in the neighborhood?
Right. But, yeah, it's nitpicky, and I think it was sacrificed for pacing, which I can't object to, but it would have been nice to know.
But it didn't jump out too much, at least.
That's true. And another nitpicky thing that I have still, again, of course, they talk about the cult and they mention its bullets being missing, but we still don't understand why or how it's working now. And I don't know if we're just supposed to accept that and move on, or if we're going to get any story behind it and Ruby's, you know, involvement in its repairs.
You know, I can see it happen kind of like they did first season, or even they did a little bit second season too, where they'd introduce something and then 8 episodes later you'd find out about it. And they'd show a little recap at the beginning to remind you about whatever it was. And you're like, right. Oh yeah, that was from like first episode.
You get that little clue at the beginning. Oh, this must be involved in this episode.
So maybe they're trying to, you know, move that along. Maybe it's a secondary storyline, you know, where they kind of have like different themes going on and they just show you an episode here and there based on it. That's kind of what second season was all like. And I didn't like that, but so be it.
It's true. It's like Sam's powers. They have an episode on it, no explanation for a couple episodes. And then, oh, hey, jump back into that.
Oh, yeah, that FBI thing. I remember.
I'm sure that will happen with the cult. You're right.
My problem with this episode was that so much of the time was directed at the party and stealing the hand. A huge amount of time was devoted to that, that they could have spent doing other things. Have somebody else die, you know, try something that isn't going to work.
It's something that could have been used for a little more scares, like you said. It was definitely a different angle than we're used to. Have the whole party scene and the whole espionage and that type of thing.
It's just that guy, that security guard or whoever he was, where he just said, oh, sure, I'll let you in. And then Dean is not even with her and she's in there making sounds. And he just says, oh, okay.
He just assumes that she's cheating on him.
What kind of security guard is going to do that?
He needs to be fired for sure. I agree. And, you know, like you said, that whole FBI stuff, like that's another nitpicky thing too. They're supposed to be wanted criminals and that hasn't really been touched on a lot this season. They have that whole guy drowning in his car. I sure hope they wipe off the fingerprints. There's no way that death wasn't going to be investigated now that both of the brothers have died.
That might be not good. You know, maybe they're installing those little fingerprint things that they put on the ends of your fingers.
Right.
They're like glued on or something and then you don't have fingerprints.
Maybe they burned them off. Yep. Overall, it's just... It was a good episode, just little nitpicks to go with it.
Yeah, and hardly any. We right. normally have a lot more nitpicky stuff than this.
It's true.
I have like 2 bullet points on my list. You know, in the episode, they're all rated pretty high this season. I mean, higher than we've seen last season, which is true because they are good episodes. But this one wasn't rated quite as high as the last few. And I'm not quite sure why, because I thought it was even better than some of the ones we've had lately.
I'm not sure either. I enjoyed it.
And I thought it was definitely better than most we saw in second season.
For second season.
I know. I'm always picking on it.
Me too.
Of course, I picked on it when we were there, too. So.
Yeah, we did. So I'm wondering in the future, since we've had that conversation at the end of the episode, where it looks like Dean's trying to do a little more to sympathize with what Sam's going through,
mm-hmm.
if he's ever going to jump on the bandwagon and get on board with Sam's quest to find a way out of the deal, or is he just going to keep up with the avoidance?
Yeah, you know, and I wonder if, you know, if Dean really just doesn't want to be saved. Like, is he really for real? Is he saying that because that's what he feels? We had those little bits and pieces, which just seemed like he was overcome and couldn't deal with it because there was too much to deal with, that we saw kind of at the beginning of second season, you know, like around Croatoan, where they had that discussion saying that I'm tired of this, I just want it to be over. You know, everybody hits those frustration moments and whatever they do. And I don't know if it's that talking or if he really just doesn't want to be saved. Or perhaps he's trying to protect Sam from the different ways that Sam might have to try and the different things, horrible things he might have to do to save Dean.
That's a good question. I'm going to hope it's the last option and that he's just trying to protect Sam from, you know, dropping dead or whatever it is that might happen if he tries to get Dean out of the deal. But they definitely have been hinting at the fact or flat out saying that Dean is ready to just give up the ghost and quit fighting forever. And, you know, yeah, and it's not making Sam feel better. That's what he's trying to get across to Dean. It's you saying you don't care anymore does not make me feel any better about you getting, you know, offed at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's very true.
So if he is just saying it, you know, maybe he'll cool that for a while.
Maybe they'll decide to settle down in Atlantic City.
And I guess the other question, you know, that we're supposed to have from this episode, I think, is who Bella killed in her family. And what is it that sent the ghost after her.
That is very true.
And I wonder if that's something that we're going to find out in the future as she makes more appearances.
Maybe we'll find out at the same time we find out why Dean's eyes bled in Bloody Mary.
Maybe. Or what really happened with Joe's dad and John.
Yeah, it's like conspiracy theories.
Right.
That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make us into conspiracy theorists.
It's all
a ploy. Yeah.
Yep. And we were teased with information about Mary at the very beginning, and we still haven't got that either.
They're cruel, I tell you. Cruel. Yeah, but they gave us a lot, so I'll have to say, you know, kudos to the writers. Speaking of the writers, perhaps we should talk about the strike.
Ooh.
For those of you who don't know, it's, and I live in Los Angeles, so it's on every newspaper, every news article. Everybody's talking about the strike. There are people in my office who work in the music and film industry, and not in my firm, but another firm. So their jobs are actually tied to the strike. It's taken over the world out here.
Yes, I bet.
Which is, you know, it's unfortunate because every show has a difficulty staying where it is. I mean, not everything is Grey's Anatomy and CSI.
Right.
Those are firmly planted. But, I mean, every other show can go at any time, really. I mean, the networks can decide they don't like it, or the ratings aren't good enough, or, I mean, it's always a game. But, as far as I know, Supernatural has 10 episodes written and done. Like, they have 10 episodes done. They have 5 more that they have scripts for. But what happens is the writers aren't the only ones that are affected because they're not working. They're on the picket lines. But that means production shuts down. Because,
right.
You know, music supervisors and everybody and all the actors and everybody, they can't, even if they have a script, they can't really do anything with it. So some are staying in production. Most of them are shut down or are shutting down in the next couple weeks. Like The Office just stopped production. Samantha Who already stopped. I mean, there's a list of them. There, if you can Google it, there's all sorts of information out there. CBS, the entire network, put an ultimatum out there saying that if the writers don't come back by November 20th, all the sets will be dismantled and they'll be done.
Wow.
Every show, CSI, Without a Trace, Moonlight, all of them.
That's crazy.
We may or may not have new episodes. We probably are going to get through the end of hiatus, but come January, if it doesn't change, there will be no shows.
Right.
And hiatus is going to start pretty soon. Was this episode 6, so we have 4 more that are done, and that'll get us through December, because then they'll have all the breaks and stuff from now. I mean, there's Thanksgiving and then Christmas break, and I support the writers. They're really trying to, you know, capitalize on these new mediums that weren't in their contract, and a lot of the, you know, actors are coming out, and all these people are coming out in support of the writers, so... There are also online campaigns if you want to help.
That's right.
Like Josh Whedon's fans sent pizza to the picket lines for his writers. It's a big deal. So we might not even have new episodes.
And that's what's really scary. It's crazy. I had a dream last night that it was over.
Oh, cool.
I woke up and I was like, was that real? Are they still on strike?
They claim there's no more money to pay the writers, but...
Right.
You know, it's always about money.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's interesting how that, yes, the writers can't make money off of the internet stuff if the companies are making money. So, I mean, if the, you know, the production companies aren't and the networks aren't making money, but if they get a percentage or whatever, then when they do start making money, then it'll all change.
And then DVD. I mean, since their contract was up last, internet... You know, streaming videos, and you can buy them on iTunes and what all, and then DVD sales are up.
That's right.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
DVD sales will really be up in January.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they're going to, networks are, what are they going to run, reruns or throw in more reality programming? Let's hope it's not the latter.
Ooh, Shudder.
But there are a lot of shows that are on the bubble as far as ratings. You know, Supernatural is always there, Pushing Daisies, Moonlight, you know, some of these new shows that are, you know, doing well, like Pushing Daisies has a huge following, and so is Moonlight, but their ratings aren't quite there, so you just never know if they're going to recover from something like that.
That's right. last time they had the strike, you know, a lot of shows didn't make it back.
With that said, let's move on to a happier note. Let's talk about some quotes. Now that all that dark, depressing stuff is done.
Right. Well, my favorite was when, you know, Bella says all that nasty stuff about them and walks away. Or, no, this is when she had the car towed, I think. And Dean asks Sam, can I kill her? And there's this long pause, and you expect Sam to do his usual thing where he's like, oh, Dean, you know. But instead, he's just like, not in public.
That was a really good one. I like the one where, I already mentioned it though, Bella called them serial killers.
Right.
You know, I wonder if she's channeling the FBI. Perhaps she's an insider.
Maybe. Oh, I liked also when Dean objected to being objectified.
Oh, that was classic.
But was secretly pleased.
Yep. Of course, he'd never admit that to her because she is, you know, the arch enemy.
That's right. I also enjoyed the fact where she was criticizing Sam for being so huffy, and he's like, you shot me.
That boy is a memory like an elephant.
That's right. Can't forget a tiny little thing like getting shot.
Yeah, well, you know, Ruby was saying that too, remember? She had the same line when Bobby shot her. She's like, you shot me.
That's right.
Like it's a big surprise. Yeah, in a lot of ways, we're channeling some Meg in these characters.
Yeah, she was definitely the forerunner and sassy female antagonist.
Well, next week, we see the storyline with Gordon come back.
That's right.
And I'm not, just not really all that interested in that storyline, but I've heard from some people they think it's going to be a really great episode and really exciting, so that's always good.
That is good. I've not been Gordon's biggest fan, but interesting to see how it plays out.
Okay, moving on to legends and references. The title of the episode comes from an old piece of weather lore and one of my favorite sayings, "Red sky at night, sailor's delight. Red sky at morning, sailor's warning." Red sky at morning is said to be a signal of rain and bad weather. The main reference we had this episode, well, there were really two. There was the Hand of Glory and Ghost Ships. Let's start with Hand of Glory. It's the hand of a murderer removed while he is on the gallows and then pickled and dried. Yummy. When used with candles made of the fat of the murderer, it was said to render people unable to move. It was also said to be able to unlock any door, thus making it useful for thieves. In this episode, Bella steals the Hand of Glory from the Sea Pines Maritime Museum. It originally came from a sailor hung by his brother for treason who takes vengeance on people responsible for the death of family members. A Hand of Glory appears in the Harry Potter books, as well as the Sandman comic by Neil Gaiman and his novel Neverwhere. The second is that of ghost ships. Sam mentions that they are often death omens, which are usually an indicator that the person who is visited is about to die. Sometimes the apparition can manifest in several places at once, called bilocation. In the episode Usual Suspects, the ghost of Claire Becker is a death omen who is a ghost of a woman killed by crooked detective Pete Sheridan. She appears to people he is about to murder, and she tries to communicate and generates the letters Dana Schlupps through printers and computers. It's an anagram of Ashland Supplies, where she was killed. When Detective Ballard kills Sheridan, Claire is at rest. That's typically how you would see a death omen play out in myths and legends. Also, in this episode, the Espirito Santo is the fictional ghost ship that appears. So, there's no basis in reality. They made up the name. So, let's talk about background and sightings of memorable ghost ships, and this was researched by Greg. According to folklore, the Flying Dutchman is a ghost ship that can never go home and is doomed to sail the oceans forever. The Flying Dutchman is usually spotted from afar, sometimes to be glowing with ghostly light. It is said that if she is hailed by another ship, her crew will often try to send messages to land or to people long since dead. In ocean lore, the sight of this phantom ship is reckoned by seafarers to be a portent of doom. Versions of the story are numerous in nautical folklore and are related to earlier medieval legends such as Captain Falkenberg, who was cursed to ply the North Sea until Judgment Day, playing at dice with the devil for his own soul. The first reference in print to the ship itself appears to be Chapter 6 of George Barrington's Voyage to Botany Bay from 1795. In modern English, the term ghost ship has come to denote at least one of the three separate, although occasionally overlapping, definitions, all of which involving one aspect or another, unexplained circumstances. Historically, the term has been used to refer to reported sightings of apparitions over water that have appeared in the form of maritime sailing ships, often after having previously been known to be sunk or to derelict vessels found floating without any crew. In fiction, ghost ships have been vessels crewed by some manner of spectral or non-living beings, and they're very common. So let's give you some real examples of ghost ships. 1775, the Octavius, an English trading ship returning from China, was found drifting off the coast of Greenland. The captain's log showed that the ship had attempted the Northwest Passage, which was never successfully traversed, and the ship and the bodies of her frozen crew apparently completed the passage after drifting among the pack ice for 13 years. On July 11, 1881, at approximately 4 o'clock a.m., the Flying Dutchman, the most famous of all ghost ships, was sighted by crew members on board the HMS Inconstant, including the future King George V of England. She was also seen by personnel on board two other ships nearby, the Tourmaline and the Cleopatra. The prince described her as a brig which emitted a strange phosphorescent view of a phantom ship of all aglow. Since it is considered a most ominous sign to have seen the Dutchman, it is interesting to note that the sailor who first spotted her was killed in a fall on board the ship, and the admiral himself died shortly after this event. 1872, the Mary Celeste, perhaps the most historically famous derelict, was found abandoned between Portugal mainland and Portugal's Azores archipelago. It was devoid of all crew, but was completely intact. While Arthur Conan Doyle's story, J. Habakkuk Jepson's statement, based on the ship, added some strange phenomena to the tale, such as the tea found in the mess hall was still hot, the fact remained that the last log entry was 11 days prior to the discovery of the ship. 1921, the Carol A. Deering, a 5-masted cargo schooner, was found stranded on a beach on Diamond Shoals, North Carolina. The ship's final voyage had been to the subject of much debate and controversy and was investigated by 6 departments of the U.S. government, largely because it was one of dozens of ships that sank or went missing within a relatively short period of time. While paranormal explanations have been advanced, the theories of mutiny or piracy are considered much more likely. 1931. The Baychemo was abandoned in the Arctic Ocean when it became trapped in pack ice and was thought doomed to sink, but remained afloat and was sighted numerous times over the next 38 years, without ever being salvaged. 1933. A lifeboat from the 1906 wreck of the passenger steamship SS Valencia off the southwest coast of Vancouver Island was found floating in the area in remarkably good condition, 27 years after the sinking. Sailors have also been reported seeing the ship itself in the area in the years following the sinking, often as an apparition that followed down the coast. 1948. Many ships responded to the desperate Morse code messages of the Dutch freighter Orang Medan. The ship was found adrift off Indonesia with all of its crew dead. The boarding party found the entire crew frozen, teeth baring, gaping at the sun. Before the ship could be towed to a home port, the ship exploded and sank. The reasons for the deaths are still unexplained today. 1955, the MV Joyita was discovered abandoned in the Pacific. 2003, Aim High 6 was a ghost ship found floating in Australian waters with no crew on board. Despite an extensive search, no trace of the crew was ever found. 2006, the tanker Jian Seng was found off the coast of Weipa, Queensland, Australia in March. I apologize if that's the wrong pronunciation. Its crew or owner could not be determined, and it was scuttled in April. Again in 2006, in August, the Belle Amica, which is one L short of the modern Italian spelling of good friend, was discovered off the coast of Sardinia. The Coast Guard crew that discovered the ship found half-eaten Egyptian meals, French maps of North African seas, and a flag of Luxembourg on board. 2007, a 12-meter catamaran, the CAS II, was discovered unmanned off the coast of Queensland, northeast Australia, in April. The yacht, which had left Airlie Beach on Sunday, April 15, was spotted about 80 nautical miles, which is 150 kilometers, off Townsville near the outer Great Barrier Reef on the following Wednesday. When boarded on Friday, the engine was running, a laptop was running, the radio and GPS were working, and a meal was set to eat, but the 3-man crew were not on board. All the sails were up, but one was badly shredded, while 3 life jackets and survival equipment, including an emergency beacon, were found on board. A search for the crew was abandoned on Sunday the 22nd, as it is considered unlikely that anyone could have survived for that period of time. So let's move on to music. The song of the night is Don't Be Fooled by Revision. The song is brought to you tonight by the Pod Show PodSafe Music Network. Enjoy.
Look a little bit clearer when you're looking through the shards of a broken mirror. Yes, I don't deserve you, and you certainly don't deserve me. It sure as East meets West on the vision of South Tennessee. That I went away, I'd only think about you at the end of every day. Sometimes I care, but you don't mean you should, but you won't. And now I gotta let you know that it's coming back around. I said it's coming back around. Can it slip my heart without a hesitation?
That's it for this week. The episode review for Fresh Blood will be out in a couple days, and there is a break until December 13, 2007, until the next all-new episode. Take care, and thanks for listening!
Thank you for listening to the Supernatural Podcast. You can visit my website at supernaturalpodcast.blogspot.com or send me an email at supernaturalpodcast@gmail.com. Please note that the opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and not of the producers of Supernatural or the CW. Audio clips played on this podcast are property of the CW and no infringement is intended. Some of the music heard here is from the Pod Show PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.